Welcome to the deep dive. Today, we're not just skimming the surface. We're really plunging headfirst into the surprisingly fascinating world of insurance fraud.
It sounds dry, maybe, but it's really not.
No, stick with us because the sheer scale of this, well, it'll probably make your jaw drop. We're talking over $308.6 billion pilfered annually.
Just in the U.S.
That's an enormous number.
And here's the kicker. That cost doesn't just, you know, vanish. The Insurance Information Institute estimates it adds an extra $400 to $700 every single year to the average American family's insurance premiums.
So, yeah, this deep dive is definitely relevant to your wallet.
Yeah.
Correctly.
Absolutely.
And it's not just the stereotypical image of someone staging a dramatic car crash.
Right. Right.
Fraud is a much broader issue. It crops up at pretty much every point in the insurance process.
Like where?
Well, you see it with applicants maybe stretching the truth on their initial forms.
Okay.
Policyholders exaggerating their losses when they file a claim. Third-party claimants maybe inventing entire scenarios.
And even, unfortunately, professionals within the system finding ways to game it.
Professionals, too.
Yeah. We're talking about everything from, like, simply padding a repair bill a little bit to orchestrating these really elaborate fake accidents. The variety is actually quite astounding.
And it's definitely not the kind of fraud our grandparents might have encountered. I mean, the digital age has completely changed the game.
Totally. It's handed fraudsters a whole new arsenal of tools.
We're seeing increasingly sophisticated scams using online applications, digital claims processes.
And the really unnerving rise of identity theft in these almost sci-fi sounding synthetic identities.
Synthetic identities. We'll have to dig into
it. Oh, yeah. It makes the ongoing efforts to combat this stuff even more critical.
Right.
It's definitely a positive sign that, what is it, 48 states and D.C. have established dedicated fraud bureaus?
That's good.
And the insurance industry itself is investing pretty heavily in technology to detect and prevent these crimes.
So there's progress.
Well, the reported increases in referrals, cases pursued, convictions, restitution recovered. It suggests progress is being made, but, you know, it's very clear this is a persistent challenge, and it keeps evolving.
Exactly. So our mission today is to really dig into the core of insurance fraud. We want to unearth some of the most maybe unexpected and significant aspects.
Yeah, get beyond the headlines.
And give you a much clearer understanding of what's going on, but hopefully without bogging you down in jargon.
Sounds good.
Okay, let's really unpack this. Where does the economy fit into all of this? Because you hear about that link sometimes.
Oh, definitely. What's fascinating here is the very clear connection between economic pressures and what's called opportunistic fraud.
Opportunistic.
Yeah. Now, this isn't usually about criminal masterminds plotting these huge heists. Instead, it often involves policyholders who, you know, they've had a genuine loss.
Okay, like a real fender bender or something.
Exactly. But then they decide to inflate their claim a bit to get a larger payout. The Foras Insurance Fraud Report from this year actually highlighted this. A significant number, 69% of respondents, believe there's been an increase in staged claims. Specifically because of the current cost of living crisis.
69%.
Yeah. And we're also seeing a rise in just exaggerated claims generally and what they call innovative fraud schemes. People getting creative, unfortunately.
So you have people who maybe under normal circumstances wouldn't even think about it.
Right. Normally honest folks.
But suddenly they're facing rising inflation, maybe job loss. There's this general financial insecurity, especially post-COVID.
Mm-hmm.
And it's like, their ethical lines get a little blurry. They start to justify adding a bit extra to that claim.
That's precisely the worry. When individuals feel that significant financial strain, actions they typically see as unethical can start to look like a way out, you know, a way to ease the pressure.
It's a concerning shift in mindset.
Definitely. And it's directly linked to those broader economic anxieties.
Now, okay, on the other end of the spectrum, we've got the really serious stuff. Organized fraud rings.
Right.
The National Insurance Crime Bureau, NICB, they're the nonprofit fighting insurance crimes, right?
Yeah, it's them.
They consistently flag this as a major ongoing problem. These aren't just isolated incidents.
No, not at all. These are sophisticated criminal enterprises. They operate much like any other well-organized criminal group.
So what does that look like?
Think about networks. Networks that include corrupt medical providers, maybe billing for services never performed.
Okay.
Unethical attorneys steering clients into these fraudulent schemes, shady auto body shops, inflating repair costs.
Right.
And disturbingly, sometimes even people working inside the insurance industry.
Insiders. That's worrying.
It is. They operate in a highly coordinated way, often hitting multiple insurance companies at the same time.
And these aren't like amateur operations, I take it.
Far from it. We're talking about them using technology to communicate securely, to launder the money they get illegally, mm-hmm. and to constantly try and stay one step ahead of law enforcement. They can even operate across state lines or internationally.
Which must make catching them incredibly difficult.
Exactly. The level of professionalism and organization means tackling them requires a really coordinated, sophisticated response from everyone, law enforcement, regulators, the insurance companies themselves.
Speaking of technology,
yeah,
it really is a double-edged sword here, isn't it?
Oh, absolutely.
It's helping the good guys detect fraud, but it's also giving fraudsters some alarming new tools.
This is where it gets really interesting and, frankly, a bit unsettling.
Oh.
The whole digital transformation has opened up completely new avenues for fraud. Take generative AI. That's a prime example.
AI, how's that being used?
We're now seeing the creation of deepfakes, incredibly realistic manipulated videos and images.
Right.
They can be used to convincingly fake accidents or property damage, documents, easily falsified. Even generating persuasive emails or letters to deceive people is becoming much simpler.
And it's not just visuals, right? You mentioned voice synthesis earlier. Someone could literally clone your voice.
They could. Call up an insurance company pretending to be you. It sounds like something out of a spy movie, but it's becoming reality.
That is genuinely scary.
It is. And then we have that growing problem of synthetic identity fraud.
Okay, explain that one.
It's seen a big surge recently, largely thanks to generative AI. It involves cleverly combining real and fabricated personal information.
Like mixing and matching details.
Exactly. To create entirely new, seemingly legitimate identities. But because these identities often use some real data points, they're incredibly hard for traditional detection methods to spot.
So it looks like a real person with a real credit history, maybe, but they don't actually exist.
Precisely. Like a digital Frankenstein's monster pieced together looks legitimate on the surface. And while the fraudsters are adopting these advanced techniques really fast, it's important to say the insurance industry is fighting back. They're investing heavily in AI-powered detection systems designed specifically for these new digital threats.
So it's an arms race.
It really is an ongoing, relentless arms race.
Okay, let's zero in on where the biggest financial hits are actually happening. We've heard the huge overall number, but where's most of that money being siphoned off?
Right. The impact varies a lot across different sectors. To give you a clear picture, healthcare fraud. That tops the list by a huge margin.
How much?
Estimated around $105 billion annually.
Billion, with a B.
With a B, yeah. Property and casualty insurance fraud is also substantial, maybe $45 billion a year. Workers' compensation fraud, roughly $34 billion.
Those are massive numbers.
They are. Then within auto insurance, you've got what's called premium leakage. That's people misrepresenting info to get lower rates.
Ah, the fibbing on the application.
Exactly. That costs at least $29 billion a year. And then just padding claims, you know, adding extra damages, that adds another, say, $7 to $9 billion to auto casualty losses.
So healthcare fraud is just dwarfs everything else, more than double the next category.
By far the biggest piece of the pie. It's a mind-boggling amount.
And that cost doesn't just hit insurers.
Right. Not at all. It's crucial to understand that this drives up healthcare costs for all of us. Through higher premiums, sure, but also reduced benefits or increased taxpayer burdens for public programs like Medicare and Medicaid. It affects everyone.
It's also interesting. This fraud isn't spread out evenly across the country, is it? Seems like some places are hotspots.
That's correct. Certain metro areas definitely see a higher concentration.
Yeah.
And this often correlates with higher rates of white-collar crime generally.
Okay.
And sometimes maybe state laws that are seen as less strict when it comes to prosecuting insurance fraud.
So where are we talking about? Give us some specific locations.
Well, Atlanta, Georgia, for instance. Unfortunately, yeah. It leads the nation in reported scam calls and has the third highest rate of white-collar crime.
Okay.
Richmond, Virginia really stands out. Highest number of white-collar crimes per capita.
Per capita. Wow.
Yeah. Other cities with significant levels include Detroit, St. Louis, Chicago, Las Vegas, Dallas. It's quite a spread.
Yeah, it's a pretty diverse list, not just one region.
Exactly. And knowing this geographic intelligence, it's incredibly valuable for insurers and law enforcement.
How so?
It lets them be more strategic, allocate investigative resources better, focus prevention efforts in these high-risk areas, even tweak their detection algorithms to be more sensitive to claims coming from these places.
Makes sense. Now, something that struck me as quite concerning is the apparent shift in how the public views insurance fraud. It feels like some people don't see it as that big a deal.
You've really hit on a critical issue there. While surveys consistently show most Americans do think insurance fraud is unethical, maybe 4 out of 5 people.
That's good, at least.
It is. But a significant minority, around 1 in 5, believe it's acceptable in certain situations.
Like what?
Well, what's particularly troubling is the trend line. The percentage of people who think it's unethical to, say, misrepresent facts on an application just to save money, that percentage has actually declined over the years.
Really? People are becoming more okay with that.
It seems that way. It suggests people are getting more comfortable with being less than truthful to lower their insurance costs.
That's a worrying trend.
It is. And you see it reflected in this growing acceptance of things like inflating claims to cover your deductible.
Ah, the I paid my premiums argument.
Exactly. Or feeling like it's okay to pad a claim to sort of recoup premiums paid over years without claims. Public tolerance for these kinds of actions has unfortunately been rising over the last decade.
Which must make fighting fraud even harder.
It poses a huge challenge. The industry constantly tries to educate people that it's not a victimless crime, that ultimately everyone pays through higher premiums, but it's a tough message to get across sometimes.
And it makes perfect sense that the economy would also affect the types of fraud we see, right? Hard times lead to different schemes.
Absolutely. Economic cycles have a really demonstrable effect on fraud patterns.
Like what? Give me an example.
Okay. So during economic downturns, or when gas prices spike really high,
right,
we often see an increase in vehicle owner give-ups. That's where someone falsely reports their car stolen.
Because it's too expensive to run, or they can't make payments.
Exactly. On the property side, arson claims tend to rise during housing market downturns or mortgage crises.
Oof. Desperate measures.
Yeah. Businesses facing financial strain might be tempted to underreport their payroll to lower their workers' comp premiums. Medical providers might engage in more fraudulent billing if their patient numbers drop.
So it's almost like insurers can use economic forecasts to predict fraud trends.
To some extent, yes. By understanding these correlations, they can be more proactive. They know which types of claims might need closer scrutiny during certain economic conditions. Adjust their detection strategies accordingly.
Smart. Okay, let's really dive deep into one of the most common areas. Auto insurance fraud. We know it costs billions. What are the main ways this happens?
Right. Auto fraud is widespread and takes many forms. One big category is owner give-ups and staged thefts, like we just mentioned.
Linked to gas prices and economic stress.
Exactly. The NICB sees a direct correlation. When gas prices go up, especially for owners of, you know, less fuel-efficient vehicles like big trucks or SUVs,
yeah,
there tends to be a rise in reports of vehicle theft where the owner is actually involved getting rid of the gas guzzler.
So they ditch the car, claim it's stolen, collect the insurance. That's a huge risk.
It is, and certain places see it more often. Houston, Vegas, Phoenix, L.A., Chicago are top cities for suspected give-ups.
And states.
California, Texas, Georgia, Florida, Arizona lead the way. And yeah, pickup trucks and vehicles known for low MPG are often involved.
Then you have the more dramatic stuff. Staged accidents. These sound pretty dangerous.
They can be, and they often involve those organized criminal rings we talked about.
Right.
There are several common patterns, kind of a playbook they use.
A playbook like what?
Well, there's the swoop and squat. One car cuts sharply in front of the victim, slams on the brakes, causes a rear ender.
Deliberately.
They might even have a second car blocking the victim from swerving out of the way.
Wow. Okay, what else?
There's the sideswipe. A fraudster intentionally hits a vehicle that's merging or turning, maybe drifts slightly out of lane, then blames the victim. The wave-in is another one.
Wave-in?
Yeah, a fraudster waves you to proceed, maybe pull out or merge, then hits you and denies ever giving the signal.
Devious.
And finally, the phantom vehicle scenario. The fraudster claims the accident was caused by another car that just conveniently drove off and can't be verified.
They've got it all figured out. And I bet the crash itself isn't the end of the scam.
Not at all. That's often just step one. It's usually followed by a flood of excessive medical claims.
The injury claims.
Exactly. Often submitted through medical mills, clinics that provide unnecessary treatment, or just bill for services never rendered. Sometimes multiple people in the fraudster's car all claim injuries. inflates the payout massively.
What about just straightforward car theft? Is there insurance fraud there beyond just, you know, stealing the car?
Oh, absolutely. You have things like title washing.
Title washing?
Yeah. Criminals take cars declared salvage or total losses, maybe flood damaged, wrecked, and resell them with clean titles in states with looser rules. Hides the damage history.
Too sneaky.
Then there's VIN manipulation. Altering or switching the vehicle identification numbers on stolen cars to disguise them. Or VIN cloning.
Cloning.
Using tech to create totally fake documents for a stolen car based on the VIN of a legitimate existing vehicle. Getting very sophisticated.
Man, thankfully, there's that NMVTIS database you mentioned, the title information system. That must help.
It does. It requires junkyards, salvage yards, insurers to report total loss vehicles monthly. Covers almost all U.S. vehicles now.
Can anyone check it?
Yes. The public can access it online to check a used car's history before buying. It's a good safeguard against unknowingly buying a car with a dodgy title.
Good to know. Now, a more subtle but still huge type of auto fraud is premium fraud. People lying to get cheaper insurance. I bet that's tempting for a lot of folks.
The temptation might be there, but the collective cost is massive. Premium fraud or rate evasion is just providing false info on your application to get a lower rate.
What are the common lies?
Address fraud is a big one, claiming you garage your car in a low-risk suburb when you actually live in a higher-risk city.
Right.
Failing to disclose high-risk drivers in the household, like a teenage son or daughter.
Yep.
Misrepresenting vehicle usage, saying it's just for pleasure when you commute daily or use it for business. Underreporting annual mileage for those low-mileage discounts.
Mm.
Falsely claiming discount qualifications you don't actually meet.
And all those little white lies... they add up.
They add up to at least $29 billion a year. That's the estimate.
$29
billion. Yep. Represents about 14% of all personal auto insurance premiums. So ultimately, honest policyholders pay more because of it.
And just when you think you've heard it all, technology is creating new ways to commit auto fraud.
Always. We're seeing things like digital image manipulation, people using software to alter photos of car damage, make it look worse than it is.
Doctored photos.
Exactly. With usage-based insurance, telematics devices, tracking driving, there's potential for tampering with those devices or the data.
Trying to look like a safer driver than you are.
Right. Some people are even manipulating electronic diagnostic codes in their cars to fake mechanical problems for a claim. And GPS spoofing. Faking the location of an accident or theft.
It really does sound like a constant game of cat and mouse.
It is. But again, insurers are developing more sophisticated methods too. Digital forensics, advanced data analytics, AI. They're fighting back against these tech tricks.
Okay, let's shift gears. Another huge area. Health insurance and medical fraud. You said this was the biggest category financially.
That's right. Healthcare fraud costs the U.S. about $105 billion every single year.
Just staggering.
And it hits everything. Public programs like Medicare and Medicaid, private insurance, leading to higher costs, reduced benefits for everyone, plus a massive burden on taxpayers.
So how is this fraud carried out? What are the common schemes?
Oh, there are numerous ways. Often involves different players in the system, and the schemes can get quite complex.
Like providers,
yes.
Doctors and hospitals.
Yes. On the provider side, you see things like billing for services never actually provided, phantom billing, or upcoding billing for a more expensive service than was actually performed.
Okay.
Other tactics include unbundling billing separately for things that should be one code, performing unnecessary tests or procedures just to generate charges, misrepresenting non-covered treatments as medically necessary to get insurance to pay, even double billing.
It sounds incredibly unethical. Hard to believe some providers do that.
Unfortunately, it happens. Then on the patient side, less common than provider fraud, but it's there.
What do patients do?
Things like identity theft, sharing insurance cards so someone ineligible can get care, faking symptoms to get prescriptions, maybe opioids, filing claims for services or meds they never got, altering medical bills to get more reimbursement.
And it's not just patients and providers, right? Can insurers commit fraud too?
While maybe less discussed, yes. Instances of fraud by insurance companies can happen.
Such as?
Misrepresenting policy benefits to sell them, deliberately underpaying or wrongly denying legitimate claims, something called post-claims underwriting, trying to cancel a policy after a big claim comes in, or cherry picking.
Cherry picking.
trying to enroll only healthy people and avoid those with pre-existing conditions or higher expected costs.
Right. And prescription drug fraud seems like a massive issue on its own.
It's a very costly part of healthcare fraud, yes. Schemes include doctor shopping, getting prescriptions for controlled substances from multiple doctors without telling them.
Right. For opioids or something.
Exactly. Forgery, altering prescriptions. Illegal online pharmacy selling meds without authorization. Diverting legal drugs for illegal resale. Fraudulent billing for prescriptions never actually given to patients.
And identity theft must make all this easier.
Absolutely. When someone's health insurance info is stolen, it can be used for fraudulent claims. Mm-hmm. But the consequences for the victim are severe to potentially contaminated medical records. That can mess up their future care badly.
And COVID didn't help, I imagine.
No, we saw a surge in related fraud during the pandemic. Billing for unnecessary COVID tests, misrepresenting elective procedures as emergencies, fraudulent telehealth billing. It was a perfect storm for certain types of fraud.
So what's being done to stop all this healthcare fraud?
There are quite a few measures. Prepayment review systems that analyze claims before paying. Sophisticated data analytics and AI looking for suspicious patterns.
Okay.
Better coordination between insurers to prevent double payments. Tougher provider credentialing and verification, medical record audits, even things like biometric authentication for some services.
And collaboration.
Yes, very important. Groups like the Consortium to Combat Medical Fraud, the Healthcare Fraud Prevention Partnership, the National Healthcare Anti-Fraud Association, they bring stakeholders together to share info and best practices. But like all fraud, it needs constant innovation and teamwork.
Now let's talk about a particularly vulnerable time. After natural disasters, fraud must spike then.
Catastrophes, unfortunately, create unique opportunities for fraud. Think about it. Huge claim volume, victims under stress, pressure to process claims fast.
Scrutiny goes down.
Exactly. It creates an environment ripe for exploitation. A big majority of insurance pros believe fraudsters actively target these situations.
What kinds of scams pop up after, say, a hurricane or a wildfire?
After hurricanes and floods, you see people claiming pre-existing damage was from the storm, inflating the actual damage, filing multiple claims for the same loss, or misrepresenting the cause, claiming wind damage when it was really flooding, maybe to get around flood insurance limit.
Oh, that tires.
Falsely claiming valuable items were destroyed, exaggerating property values, intentionally burning already damaged structures for the insurance payout, even filing claims for properties nowhere near the fire zone.
Unbelievable. Earthquakes, tornadoes.
Similar things. Claiming pre-existing structural damage, fabricating foundation issues, inflating contents damage. Even winter storms get exploited.
Ew.
Misrepresenting why pipes burst sudden freeze versus maybe neglect. Claiming wind damage from ice dams, exaggerated repair costs. We also see a rise in smaller frequent claims bundled with real ones, food spoilage, alleged theft during evacuation.
And then there are the contractors who show up after disasters. Heard some horror stories there.
Contractor fraud is a huge problem post-disaster. You get storm chasers, out-of-town crews offering quick repairs.
But they do shoddy work.
Often, yeah. Substandard work, inferior materials, then they vanish with the insurance money before finishing the job. Or leaving more damage behind.
Wow.
Price gouging is common too. Another big issue is assignment of benefits abuse, AOB. Contractors get homeowners to sign over their insurance benefits directly to them. Then they inflate claims, do unnecessary work, often without the homeowner really understanding what they signed.
That sounds terrible.
Some even deliberately damage property more to increase the repair cost scope enhancement, or operate without proper licenses. It hits insurers, sure, but it really hurts vulnerable disaster survivors who are already down.
It's clear insurance fraud is way more than just higher premiums. The societal impacts sound really significant.
Absolutely. The direct financial cost is obvious, but the economic ripples go much further.
Like how?
Businesses committing premium fraud get an unfair advantage over honest competitors.
Hmm.
Rising insurance costs can force businesses to cut staff, reduce benefits, maybe even relocate.
Hmm.
Huge public resources get diverted to investigate and prosecute fraud. Medical fraud inflates everyone's healthcare costs, affects access. The unpredictability disrupts economic planning. Some studies suggest the total economic hit could be up to 1% of GDP.
1% of the entire GDP?
Hmm.
That's enormous.
It's a massive drain. And you mentioned public health and safety being jeopardized, too.
Yeah, how does that happen?
Well, medical fraud can mean patients get unnecessary or substandard care. Improper prescribing has serious consequences. Staged car accidents can cause real injuries.
Right.
Insurance-motivated arson risks lives firefighters, residents. Counterfeit or substandard products entering supply chains via fraud schemes can be dangerous. Shoddy repair work from contractor fraud compromises building safety.
So it's definitely not victimless.
Far from it. What seems like just a financial crime can potentially cause serious physical harm.
And I guess all this fraud must erode trust in the whole system.
Precisely. Insurance is fundamentally built on trust, on utmost good faith. Widespread fraud undermines that completely. It can create more adversarial relationships between insurers and customers.
And just normalize deception.
Exactly. It can amplify moral hazard. High fraud rates in an area can even make insurance harder to get or more expensive for honest people there. And if fraud involves corruption with public agencies, well, that erodes trust in government too.
And those trends you mentioned about public attitudes becoming more tolerant. That's part of this erosion.
It's a symptom, absolutely. A very worrying sign of this breakdown in trust and maybe a normalization of certain acceptable deceptions.
So, looking ahead, what are the emerging trends, the future challenges in this fight? Sounds like fraudsters are always adapting.
The landscape is definitely evolving fast. Technology, social changes, economic conditions, they all drive new challenges.
Like AI and deepfakes. That sounds like a big one.
Huge area of concern. We're already seeing how generative AI can create incredibly convincing fake evidence.
Fake accident videos, fake damage photos.
Yep. Simulated medical conditions, sophisticated forged documents, signatures, voice cloning for impersonation.
Wow.
AI is also enabling better social engineering, really targeted, convincing phishing scams, and creating those synthetic identities we talked about, making them harder to spot. There's even potential for AI to automate fraud, generating and submitting huge volumes of fake claims.
So the bots are coming for insurance fraud too.
Potentially. Now, the industry is developing AI tools to detect synthetic content, but yeah, it's that digital arms race again.
Perpetual.
Exactly.
Yeah.
And the digital transformation of insurance itself creates new issues.
How so?
Instant policy issuance. Great for customers, but creates immediate openings for application fraud. Mobile claims processing streamlines things, but introduces new vulnerabilities alongside useful data for detection.
Right. Usage-based insurance.
Offers data for detection, but also new ways to cheat tampering with devices or data. Digital identity solutions promise security, but criminals will work to bypass them. And as insurers connect systems more through APIs, new vulnerabilities can emerge.
Yeah, there's a constant balancing act.
Big time. Balancing customer experience and efficiency with robust fraud controls in this digital world, that's a key challenge.
And then there's privacy regulation. That must complicate things.
That's a significant tension, yes. Rules like GDPR in Europe, state laws here, they limit how companies can use personal data for fraud detection.
Makes sense for privacy, but harder to catch fraudsters.
It can be. The right to explanation for AI decisions can limit using complex black box models. Consent requirements might create detection gaps. Rules on cross-border data transfer can hamper international investigations.
So what's the solution?
The industry is exploring privacy by design approaches. Things like federated learning, differential privacy, ways to analyze data effectively while safeguarding privacy and meeting regulations. It's complex.
Well, this has been a truly illuminating deep dive into this often hidden world of insurance fraud.
It's definitely more complex than most people realize.
Yeah, it's clearly a massive problem. Touches all our lives in ways we might not even think about.
Absolutely. The key takeaways, I think, are the sheer cost, the evolving tactics from opportunistic folks to organized rings using high-tech tools.
Right, and the worrying public attitudes.
The concerning public attitudes, exactly, and the huge societal impacts that go way beyond just higher premiums. Economic effects, safety risks, eroding trust.
And it really sounds like this ongoing, relentless battle, a constant push and pull between the fraudsters and the fraud fighters, especially now with AI in the mix on both sides.
That's precisely right. It needs constant vigilance, innovation in detection, and strong collaboration insurers, law enforcement, regulators working together.
So thinking about all this, the increasing sophistication, the subtle ways it impacts us.
Yeah.
How can we, just as informed individuals, as policyholders, maybe contribute to a more honest insurance landscape?
That's a great question to ponder.
It certainly gives you food for thought. It makes you consider the ethics, sure, but also those broader consequences we've explored today.